Welcome to the In the Limelight podcast. I'm your host, Clarissa Burt, and every week I bring you great information from fabulous people that I get to meet all over the world. I interview public figures, influencers, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, millionaires, and moguls that share their know-how, tipping points, pivotal moments, and life lessons. I promise you educative, empowering, and entertaining conversations with entrepreneurs that have a social conscience. Don't forget to find me on social. You can find me pretty much everywhere. Facebook, it's Clarissa Burt Official. Also, sign up for my newsletter at clarissaburt.com. That way you can keep abreast of the In the Limelight media as it's coming out. And you'll be getting my weekly newsletter along with the In the Limelight magazine every quarter. Check out inthelimelightmedia.com. Hey, everybody, it's Clarissa. We are back in the limelight yet again this week with another extraordinary entrepreneur, and it's something that is very near and dear to my heart. So stay tuned so you can find out more while I remind you that you can see these videos on Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, Android TV, Amazon Fire, and YouTube. You can hear the podcast of this interview on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Inspired News Radio. Don't forget about the magazine also. That is In the Limelight, intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur. And by the time you see this, you will probably be seeing a new cover. So we're excited about that. And there's going to be a new technology in our digital magazine this time, which is going to be very, very intriguing and very, very exciting. And you can see all of that over at clarissaburt.com. Well, you all know me well enough to know that I absolutely am one of the biggest tea drinkers on the planet. I have never lived in Italy for 30 years and never had one cup of coffee in my life. I have never had a coffee. I only drink tea. This is due to my English and Irish heritage. And it was something that I grew up with in my family. So I am going to bring on the absolute number one entrepreneur for the most authentic, rare, and exquisite Chinese teas that you can find anywhere. Not only can you find them, but our next guest is also a trainer of fine tea, better than fine teas. The fine tea is something, and she's going to explain them. Then there's way above something that's fine tea. Here she comes now. Her name is Shunan Tang. I couldn't be happier to have her here because she didn't know that I love tea so much, did you?
I heard a little bit about it, but didn't know that much enthusiasm come through.
I love tea. I have every kind of tea. I drink tea all day long. It's what I do, whether hot or cold. I love tea. Tea, absolutely. It sort of resets you, you know. Tea is something that it can cool you when you're hot. There's a wonderful quote. It cools you when you're hot. It warms you when you're cold. It soothes you when you're anxious. It brings you up when you're down. I mean, tea is almost, it's the kind of elixir that it fixes all kinds of different things, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Tea should be a religion.
It really should be a religion. You're absolutely right. Well, I want to also bring to mind, as I have read and researched you, that you are every spring, I believe, back in China, and you are actually in the area of these very fine tea trees that can be anywhere from 200 to 600 years old. Oh my gosh, dang, that's amazing. And hold on, here's the kicker. Everybody, I have never heard this before in my life, but just a single ounce of some of these teas can be about $369, $370 an ounce.
Yes.
Oh, wow. This is the tea elixir of the gods. Tell us more.
So these teas belong to a category of Chinese tea that we call traditionally famous teas or historically famous teas. So not only these teas have existed for a long time in history, frankly, Chinese, we didn't start drinking tea just in this generation. And also these teas have been heavily endorsed by, you can call them celebrities of the past. So famous poets, writers, artists, even emperors, they all heavily endorse certain teas. And the tradition of how we kind of evaluate these teas and we cherish these teas kind of just by being passed on through generations to this generation. So that's what makes these teas so highly sought after. And a lot of these tea trees still survive to today because few people know that tea trees are actually evergreens, that they live for a really long time. Depends on the species. Some species can live 60 to 200 years, and some species can live over 200 years old.
Yeah, wow. So I'm going to be putting on underneath now, you'll see teadrunk.com because Shanann is the founder of this Tea Drunk. And Tea Drunk means something very beautiful and very romantic. It's almost like a baby being milk drunk, right, Shanann?
Yes, exactly.
You say Tea Drunk, it's really that zen moment that you get into when that tea is just, my grandmother and I used to say, we would drink tea together. And she would always say, oh, there is nothing like a good cup of tea.
Exactly. Yeah, it's about the sentiment of one being lost in something. So, the focus is not so much on the word drunk, where it can have a negative connotation in English, but really it means the complete indulgence in something that one is passionate about.
Yeah, I think that it's perfect branding. I think it's an absolute genius name, actually.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's absolutely true. Those of us that are, hardcore tea drinkers know that feeling, that passion, that tradition, the moment, the waiting for a good cup of tea. You know, I have to tell you that by my living in Italy for those 15 years, Shanann, they had no tradition of tea at all. So I had 30 years worth of the worst cup of teas I ever had in my life. Because they would put, you would get the hot water from the coffee machines, and the coffee machines were made with salt. They cleaned the machines with salt. So I can't tell you how many cups of tea I had with salty water, but I digress. Let's get back to Tea Drunk. So I'm going to start showing you some pictures. I want you to tell us what we're seeing here. First of all, are you always so happy when you're picking tea?
Pretty much so. One is that I love to be in nature, and tea season is so precious. It's only the prime season for the teas that we talk about. They kind of only exist for 10 to 15 days per tea region each year in the spring. So tea season is so precious. I was just so happy to be there, be in nature, and picking the teas. And it's just very, in a way, it's hard work. Right, but it's therapeutic at the same time. I don't want to discredit, the hard work the tea pickers take and put into it. I think there is a difference when one have to do this without any other choice for living versus me having a choice, voluntarily wanted to do this for a day or two and just get away from the busy life of New York City.
Yeah, how beautiful that is, though, that you said that. So you're wearing a very heavy jacket in the spring. Is it a higher elevation and so it's very cold?
So for this particular TC region, it's actually not that high in elevation, but it is pretty north for a tea region. So you probably have heard people describing good tea terroir. People usually will say things like, a high elevation tea or a high mountain tea. It's actually not a standalone factor. It's usually viewed in conjunction of where geographically it is at. So you either basically have the altitude or the latitude. So for tea region that's further north, like this one, is already naturally pretty cold. And also for any good tea terroir, having a big temperature difference in the morning and in the evening is one of the criteria. So this is actually in the morning. That's why I'm wearing that jacket. But it's going to get so hot during the evening. Multiple layers off, and it'll get really cold again in the evening.
What are we seeing here?
These are tea leaves. So these are actually tea leaves that were picked from tea trees that's 200 to 600 years old. Wow. In this particular village around these tea trees that we pick these tea from, there is one tea tree that's called a king tea tree. Scientists have verified the age of tea tree to be over 850 years old. As you can see, when we pick the tea, if you're an experienced tea picker, the tea buds actually just kind of lined up in one's hand. So it becomes really pretty. When you have a handful of the tea leaves and tea buds, if you hand it over to someone, it actually looks like a bouquet. I don't know if you can tell some of the buds on these. because these are ancient giant tea trees. The buds are huge. Some of the tea buds are over 2 inches tall. That's just a tea bud. It's just huge.
Wow.
Tea. Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable. So listen, when you're picking tea, do you often have to get in the trees?
Depends on the kind of tea trees. So there are tea trees that have a solid trunk, and this particular tea field I am in, it's actually an ancient tea garden. So these tea trees all fall into that category of 200 to 600 year old. And as you can see that, yeah, it is a trunk, and the tea trees are pretty hardy. A branch that's the size of my wrist can actually support my whole body. That's why I'm able to stand on these tea trees. The locals always say, you know, no one wants to marry a girl who cannot climb a tree. So yeah, so it's being able to climb a tea tree is like a criteria. And so
is the location of the trees very top secret?
It's not top secret, even though for some of the very popular locations now, it is protected. The villagers would actually set up some of the checkpoints to guard the tea trees, just so people, do not overtread the tea field. It'll actually pack the soil to solid, and it hurts the tea tree. Yeah. And also to prevent anybody from stealing their tea trees. And there also, certain tea region became so famous, people would actually sneak fresh tea leaves into the village and then sell it to other people as if they come from the village. So the villagers would have to set up these checkpoints to just protect the integrity of the tea leaves of the village.
Yeah. Yeah. So is this a family business, Shanann, or is this something you started?
This is something I started, even though the inspiration of my tea drinking actually did start with my family. Both my grandpa and my father are avid tea drinkers. I would say my family overall is a pretty foodie family. We get very geeky overall about what we eat and drink. It's not just tea, including like a Chinese alcohol, wine, all sorts of food. I grew up in a coastal city. We're super picky about the different species of the seafood, if it comes from the colder water, the warmer water, and all those kind of things.
So what would you say would be some of the challenges of growing tea? Is it climate, temperature, bugs, pests? What are some of the perils that you have to be really careful about?
Right. So it really depends on what kind of tiers of tea that we're talking about. So people usually associate tea plantations with just rows and rows of tea trees. Yeah. Everywhere you can see just tea trees rolling off the hill. It is a plantation. And from my perspective is actually not very good tea at all, even though that's what you usually see in pictures of tea fields. Those are tea trees that basically is a product of monoculture. And for those tea trees, they grow very easily. It's usually planted with saplings. It's very hard for them to develop a deep root. And also with monoculture, eventually people will have to use fertilizers and pesticides to sustain these kind of high density growth of tea trees. The tea trees that we deal with, as you can see from the last picture, is very grows on very steep hill, and there's a big space between each tea trees, and it's really just in the forest. So for these kind of condition, it is hard for tea trees to grow. And that's exactly what makes them awesome tea trees. It's very similar to the most desired conditions for wine. You kind of want the plant to struggle a little bit. And with the struggle, it enables the plant to develop a more complex metabolism. And as a result, it gives us more complexity in the flavor as well. So it's kind of like we purposely seek very harsh conditions to grow the tea tree in order for us to get the best tea trees. The environment that's easy for tea trees to grow don't give us very good tea trees.
Is tea very fragrant when it's on the tree or after being picked and processed? Because I know once it's picked, it goes through a washing process, a drying process, and then a grinding process. Am I correct?
It really varies, depends on the different kinds of teas. So this is another thing that tea is so similar to wine. So, you know, you have different kinds of grape cultivars. And so tea leaves, and you can basically, you know, pick a Pinot Noir grape, and you can make it into a red wine. You can make it into champagne, which is, you know, very light color as well. So same right. thing, we can pick the same tea leaves and make them into any kinds of tea you want. You can make them into green tea, into oolong, into black tea. It all depends on how you actually process the tea.
Okay.
But you're right, when the tea leaves are on the tea plant, it actually does not taste or smell like anything. It just smells like a grain. And even when you drink the tea leaves, then it kind of tastes like a bitter grain with a little bit of fragrance to it. But what makes tea tree so special is that it's so of these enzymes that they're oxidative enzymes. And once you put the tea leaves into certain conditions, it kind of ferments on its own, and it completely transforms from aroma to the taste of how the tea leaves, you know, can give us in terms of the flavor profile. And this is what makes tea so special. It becomes so fragrant, even if you just let the tea leaves rest for like 2-3 hours.
What is your favorite tea?
I get that question asked a lot, and it almost seems like I could not give a straight answer to that. And there's a reason for that. So, because I've been drinking tea all my life, I will say, you know, I bring up kind of a different lens when I look at the tea leaves, and my favorite teas are usually the teas that kind of have a breakthrough of what the limitation of the teas are, because I know the terroir so well, I know the limitation of the cultivar so well, I know what are some of the harder notes to yield that's not easy to find in the natural tea leaves. So when a particular batch of tea from a particular vintage that are able to break through all the limitations of the location, of the cultivar, and all that, that's what gives me a tea that I love so much. And that those usually become my favorite tea. So usually it gets really, really specific. In our current selection, for example, there is a tea called Rou Gui. It's a heavily roasted oolong. We have the same tea that comes from several different small locations and also different vintages. My favorite one is this one batch that comes from a top terroir in the UNESCO World Heritage Site called Wuyishan. And the name of the terroir is called Huiyuan. The terroir usually offers very old tea trees, this sheep milk note. It's very unique and very hard to find. Rou Gui trees are usually hard to get this note. It's usually more evident in a different kind of cultivar. And Rou Gui usually is very sharp, very aggressive, but this particular batch is, while maintaining this robust nature of Rou Gui, it's kind of gooey and soft and maintains this sheep milk mossy note. It's just amazing. So usually it's these kind of things that make me love a tea so much.
You know, I wish you could get a little more excited about the work you do, because we cannot tell your passion at all about tea. Not your special or your most favorite tea, but what is the most popular tea?
The most popular teas currently, white teas are always very popular, especially the very top high grade white teas that we have, such as like a Silver Needle is a butt only white tea, because white teas are just so easy to drink. It has less tendency to get bitter or astringent. It's very soothing. I would say white tea is almost like the vanilla of tea, even though it might not be someone's absolute favorite, but no one's going to say they hate it. Yeah. We also have a oolong cultivar. It's called Bai Ye, which means white leaf, and it has a very pronounced peachy note. It's kind of tannic, so it has like a wine-like mouthfeel. I would say just picturing a very peachy, super dry, slightly tannic Riesling, even though Riesling usually is not tannic, but just like somehow it's like tannic. And it, that kind of feeling, that's what this tea is. It's very refreshing as well, super popular.
So if anybody wanted to become a tea connoisseur, much like yourself, you are offering crash courses. You have a tea crash course now.
Yes. Right. This is a thing that we launched during the pandemic when I really wanted to do something for the tea community and then continue this sense of we're doing this together, even though we cannot sip tea in person anymore. So with this package, it comes with 10 different teas. Eight of them goes with a kind of 45 minute to an hour long kind of recording of me introducing the tea. Each represent a different category of tea. And two of the teas goes with a brewing class. There are two main kind of brewing methods Chinese people use. One is an open vessel method, and one is a, using a special vessel that we call Gai Wan. And once people finish the crash course, if they want to continue to explore in the world of tea, we also offer educational tea club, where it's a continuation of the tea learning drinking experience that we do two guided tastings each month with.
Right. And I know that you are, again, you're an avid educator, because not only, and I was going to be coming to the World Tea Expo because they have it up here in Las Vegas, close to where I am.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah. They didn't have it this year, so I didn't up. I know that you've also taught at Stony Brook University, at Yale University, and you did a TED Ed lesson.
So it's a TED Ed lesson, and these are little series that's all animated. And I got an opportunity to present the history of tea. That was quite fun because tea, in a way, kind of definitely shaped our history. And obviously, tea has such a long history. So in the video, that we can only highlight some of the important things that kind of happened and also had a big impact on our current life, right? The things that's related to the Great Age of Exploration, to the colonization of the British Empire, and then the how tea came to Darjeeling, and also how tea was basically the cause of the clipper ship and these kind of things.
Awesome. So I want to remind everybody that you can get any more information over at tea-drunk.com. They are also on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Instagram as tea-drunk, or just tea-drunk NYC. Anyway, go to the website. You can find all their social there, so you can follow them there. I think that's the easiest way to do it. But they are everywhere on social as well. And before we say goodbye, I know that you had something you were showing me before on the show, one of the products that you're selling. Now, I'd love to see that.
Yes, so this is the special vessel that Chinese people will use to brew tea I was talking about. This is called a Gai Wan, which means a lidded bowl, because as you can see, it's literally a bowl with a lid on top and a saucer for support. So for the current tea snobs, people pride themselves in being able to recognize and use a Gai Wan. So if you join our crash course, one of the tea lessons that we do is a brewing class on how to use a Gai Wan. The main challenge is basically how do you hold this handleless vessel when it's full of boiling water. But this vessel definitely offers us the most maneuverability around how we can handle the tea inside. So it's quite a fun vessel to use, and it's almost like riding a bike. Once you learn how to use it, you'll never forget. It's worth it.
Absolutely. Well, Shannon Tang, it has been absolutely fabulous having you here, learning more about tea. Again, something I love very much. And we're happy to have you back on when you have your new teas, and when you're coming back in from the next season, let us know. We'll have you back on so you can tell us all about that.
So all right. Thank you so much, Clarissa. Yeah, I really appreciate it. It's so fun.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm going to give up. You stay right there while I give appointments to all of our listeners to next week, when we will have another extraordinary entrepreneur that we can always learn something from. Again, thank you so much, Shannon. You stay thank right you. There, and we'll be talking to everybody next week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for watching this episode of In the Limelight TV, intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur. Please consider liking, sharing, and subscribing to my channel on YouTube. And you can listen to the podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Inspired News Radio. Go ahead over to inthelimelightmedia.com to read our digital magazine. And don't forget to connect with me on social pretty much anywhere. Stay well until we meet again in the limelight.